Lindsay. Congratulations on such a phenomenal film. What drew you to this project?
Oh my God. I've been a Stephen King fanatic my whole life, and a Shining fanatic for my whole life. And so I read the book the weekend it was published, and I think we talked about it right away because
we were working on a movie at the time.
Yeah, immediately I said, oh my God, if they ever make a movie of Dr. Sleep, wouldn't that be the coolest project to be a part of? And I had told my agents for years to try to get me in the room on it. But what they would always say was, we don't think anyone's actually gonna make it. Warner Brothers has it, and we don't know if they have any plans to actually make the movie. But yeah, I mean, the idea of being able to continue the story of Danny Torrance, you know, and kind of live inside of that universe a little more was always something that was irresistible to me.
There's enormous pressure here as well, because not only you got to adapt the Stephen King novel, but you've also got to homage and, like, sequel a Kubrick film. So how did you approach that in building this world?
Well, I think if someone had asked us if we wanted to do The Shining 2, I think the answer would have been no. So it was really Stephen King's blueprint in the book that grounded that and made it about little Danny Torrance all grown up, which is a lot of the stuff that Mike writes and directs and we do is to do with childhood trauma as it's manifested in adulthood. And there's no better cinematic example of that than Danny Torrance. So it was really the grounding of that, because there's no percentage in trying to out-Kubrick Kubrick. So there was none of that even attempted, I don't think, but...
Yeah, and I think in respect to the pressure that you're talking about, there was never a question in our minds that we weren't kind of stepping into the shadows of two very monolithic creators. And so the mission was always to try to celebrate them as much as possible and to try to honor them both, while, you know, first and foremost, being true to Dan's story. And being true to that arc, we figured if we could get Dan right, then the rest would fall into place. Hopefully,
absolutely. So, what drew you to Ewan McGregor as Danny?
Well, Ewan did actually. We met with a number of actors at the beginning to try to find our Dan, and we had a lot of conversations about The Shining with all of them, because it's a movie that's, you know, influenced so many people so profoundly. And what was amazing about Ewan was that he came into the room, and for the first 30 seconds, you know, he talked about The Shining and how, yes, this is a follow-up to The Shining, but then immediately pivoted off of that entirely. And he said, but what I want to talk about is recovery. I want to talk about Dan's journey to sobriety, because that's what is really grabbing me about this story. And because he wanted to talk about Dan, and he didn't want to talk about The Overlook, he didn't want to talk about The Shining, I think that told us both he was the guy. He was the perfect person to play him.
He was really passionate about it. From the moment he walked in the door, it was really compelling.
Yeah.
Because there's so many layers, I think, to Danny and the story, especially because it deals with child abuse in the past and ongoing, because obviously the true knot is a child abuse kind of symbolism. So
yeah.
How do you, like, these threads, especially with him and Abra, because Abra's like someone who hasn't been touched by the world and her shine hasn't gone yet.
Yeah. Yeah, the theme of what the world does to children, you know, is something that's so beautifully rendered in the novel. And of course goes back to Danny Torrance, who had one of the most traumatic childhoods of any fictional character that you can really imagine. And survived it, but survived it with scars. And the true knot very much is this kind of extended metaphor of a predatory world that will take what is special about a child and eat it, you know? That's a really heavy and very devastating theme to really dwell in. And I think Stephen King was very brave in the way he approached it in the book. Abra, as you said, represents this unspoiled, you know, magical childhood. And it's kind of her potential and her naivety, I think, that make her both such a strong and fierce protagonist, but also such a vulnerable character. She doesn't know what the danger is that she's getting herself or anyone else into. How to protect the innocence of childhood, especially through a character like Dan, whose own innocence was destroyed and shattered so violently when he was so young. you know, that to me is thematically, it's one of the things that's been very, very present in all of our work, and something that's what really resonates with me. I think the scary stuff is the scary stuff, and that's really fun, but this kind of stuff is what it's really all about.
Absolutely, and I really love the use of space as well, from the Overlook to Abra's bedroom to Rose's mind palace. Mm-hmm. So how did you develop these lovely sets and using that as an allegory for people's mindsets?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we had access to all of Stanley Kubrick's production design elements for the Overlook, which sets a bar. You know, once we know that we're rebuilding sets that Kubrick had designed, it meant that all of our other sets needed to be really, really great. We couldn't just kind of throw four walls up and then go from the Colorado Lounge or the Overlook Hotel to this kind of unremarkable space. But the idea that physical space and rooms can be expressions of a character's mind, imagination, and memory is something that has actually popped up in several of Stephen King's books. You know, from kind of the simple version of it with Abra's file cabinets versus Rose's cathedral. And, you know, Dan's memories are kind of stored in the shadow of the Overlook itself, in both the Colorado Lounge and in the hedge maze. It's kind of when we're in his mind, that's where we go. Connecting those spaces, letting those spaces be extensions of the characters who inhabit them is one of the most... one of the most fun, you know, challenges that we have in a production design, you know, perspective.
But, well, also, this is a moment to acknowledge our exceptional DP, Michael Femignari, mm-hmm. who composed and shot them in such a compelling way that, you know, we always talked about using some of the visual language of Kubrick when we were making the movie, you know, center punch framing, the aspect ratio, but the way he composed the shots and the way, you know, Mike blocked them was very cognizant of all of that. It's a really good question.
And just final question, casting Rebecca Ferguson as the villain, because she's great. She's so compelling and terrifying at the same time. How did you get Rebecca Ferguson on board?
So we Skyped with a couple and met with a few actresses. And we Skyped with Rebecca because mm-hmm. she was in another country at the time. And I think we knew 15 seconds into the Skype.
Yeah, it took no time at all.
None. It was the easiest decision that we had to make.
I'll jump in. What makes Rebecca so compelling about it is that she's relatable and you kind of like her as she does these things that are just objectively despicable. And that's a hard balance for an actor to strike.
Yes. And Rebecca had kind of decided early on that a villain and a monster in stories like this, they can do horrible, horrible things. But if they don't perceive themselves as the monster, if in her mind she's the hero of the story, if she could rationalize all these awful things she did because, of course, she did them to protect her family, then that would make it all the more frightening. And I think that was the perfect approach. Was she said, I'm not a villain. I'm not the monster of the story. As far as I'm concerned, I'm the hero of the story. And, you know, I protect my family at all costs until these two awful people come into my life and ruin everything. And that's the movie she made. And I think that's the only way to effectively approach a villain. And I love what that is.